This group is called Help Me Adapt, Lord, Living More Simply. Let me start off with the first poem in this book called Help Me Adapt, Lord. It's called How Much Is Enough? My life goes along well. Let's start that again. My life goes along well. Regular raises, home improvements, happy vacations. Enough, always enough. Just lately I've cause to wonder, will it all be different soon? Will I always have a car, new clothes, cheap housing, and a raise? Will I have to adapt to change, adjust my expectations, temper my extravagances, be satisfied with less? Will less be enough? Lord, you have spoken to me of an abundant life. Not so much the surplus of affluence, but the joys of love, serving, caring, learning about life and you. This new life does not rely on things, but finds satisfaction in being, doing justice, valuing people. The abundant life knows contentment, and there is always enough. I thought we'd start today with just a little quiz. Let's see, what would be easiest? To have you all put your hands up first and take them down. Should we do it that way? Okay. So when I start to list these things, you can have your hand up in the air to begin with. But if it does not apply to you, if it's a no for you, you have to take your hand down. Okay?
Confession or something?
Yes, this is... Yeah, I love it. This is confession, right?
I don't know that I want to do it. Well,
just close your eyes and then you won't know.
Everybody must close their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, you can all close your eyes, children. And take your hand down if it does not apply to you, okay? Hangs out the laundry whenever possible. Whoops. It's a bad place to start. Isn't it nice to know there's so many? Here, this will help. All right. Gives to world hunger. See, that's pretty good. Drives a small car. Rides a bike or runs regularly. Yes, the hands tend to go down on that one. Now, this, okay, put them back up. I think we might have to reverse this. Is in a carpool. Usually we just have very few of those, yes? We have six here, it looks like.
But if you don't work?
No, that's true, that's true. I think it's going to be easier if we keep our hands down and put them up if it's true. Now, these next ones are going to be tough. Fast. Well, we got one, two, three. Great. Yeah, no, diet doesn't count. No. Nope. Tries to eat less sugar. Oh, good for you. Look at that. I can't raise my hand.
Tries.
Tries. Sure. All right. I can't even, you know, I have a spoonful of honey at least three times a day now. Yeah. Had an inexpensive party lately. Good for you. That's good for you. You know, we really have. It's something I've noticed. Many people cut back. And now when we have get-togethers, very often everybody's potlucking, whether it's a main meal or hors d'oeuvres. We're still eating just as much, of course. We don't know how to have parties without food. Doesn't have air conditioning. Does not have air conditioning.
We're in the house.
Yeah. How about in the car? Sure does. Gave up a long driving trip. It's pretty hard to get here. Saves bottles or aluminum cans. Oh, good. That's good. Recently wrote a legislator. Oh, well, that's fairly good. has re-insulated lately, you know, the last 5 years or something. Re-insulated. Yeah, even the hot water tank. Very important place, the hot water tank. Takes the bus. Yeah, or the L. All right. Or whatever. Public transportation, I should say. Has read a book on conservation or world population. Well, that's fairly good, but there's a lot of good articles would come. There's a lot of stuff over there in that bookstore that are great, and I'm going to recommend one today. Well, I think we'll do the second one, too. This is a conservation quiz. Raise your hand if you remember to turn off unnecessary lights in your home and office. Okay, I'll believe you. Do you use your washer and dryer after 6 p.m. or before 8 a.m. to avoid peak demand? Yes, working mothers know that that's the only time you can get at it. Do you repair leaky faucets to save fuel as well as money? I just can't stand to see them leak. Do you comply with the 55-mile-an-hour limit? Speed limit. Well, we could improve. We could improve. Do you defrost your food before cooking? That's an interesting one. Sometimes. Of course, when we have microwaves. Do you maintain a thermostat setting of 66 in the winter and 70 in the summer? 70, I think that's quite low. Yeah, I wonder. 70 is very low, I think, for summer. Do you try to cut back your use of hot water for laundering? Because we know that that's where we use up the most, next to, well, of course, air conditioning would be terrible. But in terms of our hot water usage, it's that bathing and so on that gets to us as far as using up heat and petrol and so on. All right, so that's just a little experiment to see where we are. Because we do need to be aware of these things, I think, and we're going through transition times. We noticed it more in 1973 when we had the oil embargo, and the few years afterwards when there were lines waiting for petrol. But interestingly enough, we don't talk about it anymore, and we talk about the glut of petroleum now, which I think is an interesting concept. Is there more petroleum now than there was in 1973?
No. Some people say there never was a shortage. I don't know that.
Yeah, don't believe them. I think any geologist would take that kind of person to issue. Yeah, take issue with that kind of person. There is some we haven't pulled out of the earth yet. We have a very good film on that. I could leave it. I'm going out of the village for a couple days, and that film is here. If some of you have real desire to see this, it's about 25 minutes long, and it's called Energy in Perspective. It's one of the most graphically well done films I've ever seen, and it just tells the story of how much energy we have, what are our resources, how much is left. We're going to take that issue of resources and put it alongside the issue of our own lifestyle from a more spiritual, enriching, life-giving point of view. And the books that I'm going to be, one of the books that I'm going to use predominantly for the background of this is called Food, Fuel, and Future. This happens to be the teacher's copy, but these are available in the bookstore, the participant copy. This is a five-week or weekend learning packet, so to speak. It contains good information, some of which would now be slightly dated. It has very good suggestions for group participation. It has devotions for this period of time over a five-week period, scriptural readings and so on. It's solid in its background. It comes out of the Virginia Synod originally. Maybe it's West Virginia, I can't recall. And these people had developed this. It's very well done. So that I think it's valuable just to read in and of itself. It's a very inexpensive book. But it is better when you do something in a group with it. And they have a lot of things where you prepare meals together or you keep track of your driving for a week. Little disciplines like that that you can kind of do for 5 weeks with a group and encourage each other. And in that process, grow a lot in your self-awareness, which I think is a terribly important part of this whole thing, consciousness raising. So Food, Fuel, and Future is my background material, as well as some others that I'll tell you. Pardon? Well, it's an ALC-LCA thing, Parish Life Press in Philadelphia, so that's LCA, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so if you write to the LCA, you can always get it. But it's in most of our church bookstores. Lutheran church bookstores, anyway. What? The board, yes. Too bad the board doesn't have any fun.
You should wonder, don't
you? Yeah. They say they come here to work. One of the things that we developed as we taught this class was a notion that there are four pressures in our lives that are difficult for us to resist. Things that attract us and gain sort of control over the way we behave. Things that we allow ourselves to do and experience. One I'm sure you'll recognize is, you better use a different color. Possessions. Anybody have any problems with that? What? No hands? Of course. That need to acquire, the need to have, to fill our emotional needs sometimes with things. I know that I have walked away. I can recall one time from going away from a therapy session being absolutely devastated after it was over and going immediately across the road to the shopping center and walking around literally in a daze, just kind of looking at things. But having the sudden awareness that what I was trying to do was fill up that empty spot that had just happened. And then realizing the only place I was going to get that taken care of was to go home and be with people and get it filled up that way. But we do that quite naturally in this culture and without thinking. So possessions, we call that materialism only. We have a sense we will be filled by those things that we can acquire. A second one is power. Power is not a bad thing. Women need to know more about power, for example. But when it becomes our goal in life, it can get in the way. As if with anything else, we're talking moderation a lot and balance. The word, the more fancy word for what we're talking about here in this situation is consumptionism. You know, one way to feel powerful is to consume, whether it's eating or possessing or having, the bigger car, the better way, all of that gives us a sense of power over life and each other. The third one is one that we, in any case, you know, in all cases, we don't want to put anything aside. Pleasure, of course, pleasure is terribly important to us and necessary. And if you're Lutheran long enough, you might not even know what it is. I don't know. That's such a put-down. Lutheranism isn't fair. But you've all seen books. You know, if it feels good, do it. I see bumper stickers like that. That whole self-indulgence thing. Some of that is not bad. It is time that we take note of those kinds of experiences in our life and credit ourselves. However, it does, I think, in particular in the 70s, got a little off balance. And the fourth one is pride. You see, we could have left these in the big words, but you wouldn't have remembered them, right? I can never decide if it's egoism or egotism. And that too, in the 70s, we saw a lot of emphasis on that, being number one.
The me generation.
Yep, the me generation. And we live in a country that operates on a lot of that, in my opinion. We are number one. And it's very easy to fall into that because, of course, we have a lot of power. And that's a pleasure.
And there's so much competitiveness in our society.
Yeah.
The competing, you know, the whole athletic game.
And we build on that kind of thing, and it does sort of eat away at us. I thought it'd be fun to take a look at how that kind of thing is appealed to today. I'm going to give you in twos or three, probably in groups of three at least, some ads for various things. And when you look at it, this one's pretty obvious, see what it is appealing to in terms of those four P's. And then we'll go around, you can just hold yours up and say what it is. Why don't you help me pass these out? The bottom one opens up. Here we go. In some cases, it's more than one thing that they're appealing to. They, of course, is us. We can't blame Madison Avenue for what appeals to us. We can't hope they'll be a little responsible, though. Mm-hmm. Oh.
The new rise of the yuppies, certainly.
Yes. That's good. I think I'll write that word down. You're going to need one upstairs. When we go around, you may have to describe slightly your ad or read it. Read the main captions or whatever. From back, way back, let's start.
Okay. This ad says, the signposts of success are clearly lettered in the gold V.O. Seagram whiskey of some sort. And we decided it was pleasure, but it was also pride, you know, the very best, the gold letters.
Hmm. And success, elevating success. Is there another one back there?
No.
Over here? Mm-hmm. Paul?
We have this one on Winston. I want the best taste I can get. I can get it from Winston. Pleasure, obviously, and also pride when you're thinking about the best taste I can get.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Egoism, perhaps, too. Your egotism for me, number one. Next one along. Okay.
The area's number one news team, and it's the pride number one. Probably also a little appeal to, I don't know which one that goes with, but that you're getting it from the right place if you get it from them.
No. Sure.
That's pride, too.
They're awful good. They're very well-groomed, as all news people are these days.
I was commented how different this is in 6 years. I'm sure that if this same station has a picture now, there will be at least one of the ones, a woman and a person of color.
That's
all
right.
All times combined.
That's right. There is. There is. One of each.
Yeah.
Okay.
Impress friends and influence people. Seagram's, who you thought that was power, showed you were right.
Seagram's is on to something, aren't they? Power, very much. Okay.
This says, me, for the woman who knows exactly who she is. And it's, we thought a little bit of everything, but mostly egotism.
Okay. We really identify with her, don't we?
What is it, Virginia Slims?
Could be.
Perfume.
Back here.
Well, I think this one's got all four. You got it, a powerful pleasure.
Oh, wow.
So obviously, we've got possessions, materialism, we've certainly got power, we've got pleasure, and we've got pride.
And all of that in a Toyota.
And all of that. Toyota, so, I don't know.
Yeah. Balcony?
We had two. We have the All American Hollywood star here saying if you smoke Winston, you might look like me and have it all. Well, that's what he's saying, yeah. This side has a new marquee standard of living comfort. You owe it to yourself to drive this car.
Really important.
That hits all four.
That message comes through a lot.
You owe
take care of yourself. You deserve a break today. All that stuff.
Ours is on emerald, the liquid emerald, precious, sensual, slightly dangerous. One thing we noted too was all the gold and jewelry down in here in the front, which applies to possessions, definitely pleasure, pride, maybe power.
And a lot of hedonism in that one. A lot of that pleasure stuff.
Slightly dangerous.
Slightly dangerous.
Down here someplace, is there one?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll get you a minute, Ted.
You want to go this road first?
Sure, okay. Ted.
Okay, this is Smirnoff Vodka, and it talks about how elegant it is and luxurious, and it hits on how if you are really somebody, this is what you'd be drinking because everything else is for lower class people.
Second class. Okay.
A lot of Vance Packard in this Cadillac. They're selling Eldorado Ritzes, and it focuses on materialism and consumptionism. Also notice that everybody that is selling whatever they're selling is thin, attractive, non-gray.
They're beautiful people.
So to speak, yes. What we describe as beautiful people, huh? We've pretty well covered the second row, haven't we? Oh, back here. Okay, sorry.
This is the Bell system. It says, I choose some good reproductions and one original. Be choosy. So we thought that this dealt with possessions, you know, having the original, just having more than power because I choose, and then the consuming, you know, buying this telephone, but also it's probably because of the I choose, you know, I'm in power, I'm in control, and of course I will choose Bell, right? And not just their phones, but all their services, of course, because they give you such a good deal.
Okay, good. And we want to get back to choices in a minute. Help me remember to do that before we finish today. Someplace along here? Okay.
We have two of them. Have a Coke and a smile. Coke adds life. So from a bottle of Coke, you're going to get a lot of pleasure and you'll get life too. So that's reinforcing the pleasure aspect. And then the other one is Salem cigarettes. Taste Salem lights the best of the lights. So there you have pleasure and pride, number one.
Mm-hmm.
We've got one from Twin City Federal. Money can't bring you happiness, but it can help you enjoy the things that do. Make up your mind to have money, and there's a picture of a man holding up his child, so they're appealing to the possessions and power of money.
Repeat the phrase slowly again that says.
Money can't bring happiness, but it can help you enjoy the things that do.
Okay.
Old pleasure, so it's going for pleasure. And we also decided power, too, because it shows him having climbed the top of the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
And Dorothy said, not if he smoked cigarettes, he wouldn't.
Good. Later on, I'd like to get those all back from you because I can use them again. Lord, the book I was reading before turning out the light is a revelation of my lifestyle, the department store catalog. It's fun. But that's no way to end a day. It's only another extension of the kind of life to which I am becoming numb, a life of clutter and convenience and very few genuine wants. I get preoccupied with the ornaments of affluence. How much is a credit card worth? It provides me with activity for myself and my children, a shopping trip. It is a means to convenient shopping. I use it for uneven needs that I rationalize are necessary. But what do my actions teach my children to value? How would a credit card stand up against sorrow, or compassion, or trust, or the love of the children who shop with me? I must set my sights higher. Perhaps I'd better turn the light back on and read James for a while. Thank you, Lord, for nudging my conscience this way. Fill me with your spirit, which will lift me above my way of life to a meaningful relationship with you. One of the things that makes it possible for us to get trapped in this kind of pattern is the fact that we do believe in progress. Progress is such a good word to us, but it can be defined in so many ways. Generally, what words would you think of as being synonymous with progress?
Growth, consumption.
Bigger and better.
Bigger, bigger. Better house, bigger, better car.
Bigger, better. Uh-huh. See how they're all very positive notions. But they're also all quite stretching out, aren't they? Growth, bigger and better, taking unto ourselves, consuming. Maybe progress is something else. And we might want to think about that today. God, progress can be an odious thing. I watch this giant progress. The convenience of paper is creating mountains of trash. The ease of mobility is choking my children in monoxide fumes. The great wonder, the atom, hovers over our heads, ready to split mankind into myriad fragments. Excuse the sexist language. I have been selfish as I use resources to maintain my comfortable way of life. I am greedy in my use of electricity and water and food. I've had a narrow view of the present without serious consideration of the future. I like bearing children. I avoid the possibility that there may be no grandchildren, or that they will live in an overcrowded world which is inevitably diminished in its quality of life. For me, philosophy and cookbooks are fun, yet most people haven't enough food to develop sound minds, or time from their labor to enjoy learning, or schools where they could learn. We are misusing progress, Lord. We are misusing our minds, developing technology to the glory of progress and power and gadgets, while keeping the beauty of nature and of human souls and bodies underdeveloped. Forgive us. Save us. The underlying question that's posed in that is, can the world afford our lifestyle, the world now? We think so in such small ways so often, in a daily kind of way. We read the news of hostages and world events, but we tend to block out what that means in terms of human beings and how they are influenced by us. How nice if we could have a sense of having a sister or a brother in another place and being in relationship with them. Might not be it. You remember how we used to have pen pals in school? How that changes our picture of the world. Maybe that would be something we need to do. What would it mean if we had a pen pal in Russia? We are at 6% of the world, using approximately 40% of the world's resources, clearly have an impact on the rest of the world. It's not possible for one nation to use up all of that without somebody else paying the price. Somebody is supporting us. We who like to think we're so capable and independent, somebody is supporting our way of life. I found a very good book about this, written by a former Holden teacher, two of them, Larry Rasmussen and Bruce Birch. Rasmussen, right today, was an E, and Bruce Birch was an I. And the name of this book is The Predicament of the Prosperous. Kind of an interesting title, I think.
And this is in our bookstore. And in my teaching and working with students from the seminary, it was ironic that I was going to the seminary at the same time I was teaching students. I would always recommend that they read this book, The Predicament of the Prosperous. It's not hard to read, but it paints the picture of where we are in the world and how we might look at that. And then it gives us some scriptural awareness of what that's about and what we might do about it, how we might think about it. I found it very encouraging. But let me share just one small portion of that, if you can listen to that. In some respects, the makeup of the global picture is quite simple. Charles Birch states the formula this way. The total negative impact of all people is, in its simplest terms, a product of three items. Total population times the consumption of resources per person times the environmental deterioration per person. That makes sense? Can you picture it? Such big words. Each item is independently important. The more people, the greater the impact. The more consumption of resources, the greater the impact. The more environmental deterioration, the greater the impact. The chilling fact, he notes, is that viewed in global perspective, every item of the equation is increasing. Population, though slowing in some places, will nonetheless double in the next 35 years. You think what that means in terms of the whole world. Pollution has doubled in the last 14. This book will be about 4 years old. Much resource consumption has been doubling every 10 years. That's in flux now, but we aren't really cutting it back very much. Birch's conclusion is as serious as it is certain. The result is a huge and steadily multiplying impact of human beings on the environment, which cannot possibly continue without the gravest consequences to both humanity and the rest of creation. The picture is this. We, the human family, cannot afford the modern world, and neither can the rest of nature. There's no chance of the poor countries developing adequately unless the rich countries reduce the huge proportion they contribute to the total impact. This involves a program of de-development of the rich world. The rich must live more simply The rich must live more simply so that the poor can simply live. That's a forbidding thought. That's a hard concept for us. And it's hard to deal with because it seems so big. And it confronts at its very basic level our style of life, not only as we live in our homes and our businesses, but the whole ground on which this economy is built, which is consumptionism, obsolescence. Ooh, I get so mad sometimes when I buy something and it breaks so soon. And there's no way I can repair it. Nay, I have to throw it away and buy a new one. That's the setup. And that's... Well, I'm not going to get into economics.
Even getting a pair of shoes repaired costs half as much as a brand new pair of shoes.
Is it worth it at that point? Let's ask that question then. That's a good one. I like that example. If it costs half as much again to repair the shoes as to get new ones, what do you do?
I do it if I like the shoes
and if they're comfortable.
And if you've only had them 3 weeks.
But not from a conservation standpoint. The only thing that bothers me about some of this, you know, like being told as a child, clean your plate, think of all the starving Indians. whatever, depending on where you are. How do we, by using less, put more in the hands of the poor?
Yeah, I wonder about that too.
Okay.
The third world solutions won't come out of the third world. They have to come out of the technological world. You know, they're not, you know, their problems with overpopulation
are our problems because they're our brothers and sisters. Mm-hmm. But they're not going to come out of, they'll come out of education.
Do you think so? Well, good. I'm glad you raised that.
I think that an educated, in the broad sense of the term.
Educated world.
An educated world is going to be a safe world over an more so than an uneducated world. That would be my presumption. But problems of population control, the nuggets of truth and solution, I think are going to come out of the technological culture.
We are very knowledge is created a good deal of this. Mm-hmm. We go into third world countries and we teach these people how to save the lives of their babies. I mean, what more humanitarian thing can we do? But we don't show them how to feed the babies.
What is the problem with feeding that we're aware of? I'll come to you, Paul, in a second, unless you want to keep it at this point.
Mm-hmm. I'm also bothered by the fact that we are the consumers. The reason, to some extent, we are the consumers is that we have a large, what we term, middle class. Then it's hard to look at the third world and realize that they're not consumers because there's very little of the middle class. The people who have it are consumers, but then there's this enormous that doesn't have it. In other words, within those countries, there is not this tendency to share what's there,
okay,
at the top and the bottom.
Now, we've opened up Pandora's box. That's good. Good that we've done that. And Food, Fuel, and Future will help you deal with that, by the way, if we don't get it all done today. If we don't get the whole problem solved today, don't be afraid. Distribution is a very important part of that question. There's another book I could recommend to you that would be kind of a nifty thing to read in a group. That's what we did. We had a small group of dealing with world hunger. You know, if you want to set up a small group, that's a good one to set up because it's tangible. And people understand, and they are concerned about it. And you can get 4, 5, 8, 15 people together and use this resource, or you read together a book like this one, Food First. Or sorry, I don't know the title. I mean the author. Food First, it's an easy book to read. But when we talk about this problem, we are talking about distribution. And when we're talking about population, that's involved with that. We have evidence that indicates that the reason people have larger families, anybody know?
Poverty. They're their joy.
Yes?
Well, they want
security.
Grow up and live.
All right. It's very important to have enough children live so that someone will take care of you in your older age and will continue to be able to work whatever way they work in order to earn for the family. So more children are still valued. That was still true here 100 years ago. But we do not, that is no longer true for us. But in countries like Mexico, that's a very important thing to have a large family. It is not a religious question so much. And educating people to birth control is not really the answer at that point. If survival is the bottom line, birth control doesn't look like survival to people. So where poverty exists, we have larger families and more poverty grows. We've seen that. And the problem of food is a problem. Another portion that you would read much more thoroughly in Food First, and I guess you'll just have to take my word for it, I've read about this stuff. I'm not an expert, but another very important part of this problem is land distribution. We're talking about, as Agnes was talking about, the upper class keeping the land. And of course, Nicaragua was one of the best examples of that just recently. And it's still true, something like 14 families control much of the land down in that area, not Nicaragua. When companies have gone in and found cash crops in given countries, let's talk about one of the Caribbean islands, where it was found that they could process sugar, get good sugar cheap, right? For us, and there we all were with our hands up saying we're trying to reduce the amount of sugar we eat, but we're not too good at it. So here was a marvelous market for selling sugar and cloves. So we went down and developed that stuff, developed that land, but in the process relocated all those families who had small plots of land and could in fact, and did in fact, raise enough food to supply their own families. Whether we're talking about Puerto Rico or any of those other islands. So we displaced people in the move toward technology and bringing those kinds of products into our land. I can remember, do you know the name Bachmann at all? Those of you who live in Minneapolis do.
Flowers.
The largest florist in the country. And one of those people, one of the Bachmanns, two of them, were in our class when we were reading Food First, and these folks really got into this stuff. They loved it. And they read a lot of stuff. And Jean one night described sitting reading in bed one of these books about land distribution and cash crops. That's what we call that. And that's what she read was that in Bolivia, I'm not sure, I'm sorry if it's Bolivia or Colombia, people found that they could raise carnations. Now, of course, nobody can eat carnations, but they could raise them like crazy. And they could get such a good market at such places as Bachmann's in the United States. She said she almost fell out of bed. To realize that they were contributing to that, moving people off the land, because certainly it doesn't take as many people to work a product like, especially with technology, to work the land. You're really not providing them. Then people, so you pay people to do that kind of work, perhaps, but you don't pay them enough to buy the food that they have to import from the USA. That's backwards. That's worldwide.
Excuse me, isn't that part of the problem of the Ethiopian situation?
Oh, that has so many components, I don't know.
They were raising cash crops rather than food for their own.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. I'll read you some material in a while that will show that there were countries where their people were starving from famine and they were still raising products to send here because they could make more money here. But, you know, people can't eat money. So that's one piece of that, and I think land distribution is a very important part of that. I'm not sure how we got to this. We were wondering if what we do influences. Let me share something that fits with Doris. My comfortable shoes are wearing thin. The soles are worn, and the scuffs show. Time for another pair, or is it? Perhaps I could recycle rather than replace. New soles and polish would suffice. Part of understanding life is recognizing limits and expanding creativity. I can resole, S-O-L-E, and resole, S-O-U-L. Part of what we're doing may not have direct effect on somebody in Ethiopia, although there are things we can do to help them. But it may have an important effect on us. That's selfish, I suppose. But it's also strengthening, building. It's Christian, I think, to work on the soul that lies behind these kinds of needs. The only way to work on that sometimes is with sacrifice and change in habit. So that pretty soon you become proud of something different. Might be all right, Jean.
And for me, it's a matter of stewardship. You know, why use more than I need? You know, why, no matter what else, this is, you know, God has given all of this to us to take care of. And so why use any more than I need? It's like the quote about, you know, live more simply so that the poor can simply live. You know, they're all part of God's creation and all part of my stewardship and responsibility. Yeah. That makes sense or not?
And let me just add to that, that has something to do with our own vision of ourselves and our understanding of God. And it also has something to do with other people. Because most big changes, we were learning about this last week in the most interesting session, scientific session, most major changes in the world do come about from grassroots efforts, from small individual changes that somehow take, I have this image of a Have you ever worked with pottery on the wheel, and you have this piece of clay and it's spinning round and round and round, and you just do one little thing and it changes the whole thing? Now sometimes it all just goes to pieces, usually that's what happens to me, but it also can form something wholly new and beautiful. And that is, in fact, they're studying more and more and discovering that that is exactly how systems work. Not always linear, that this affects that, affects this, affects that, but much more in up and down and depth. Well, I can't go into that. It was a wonderful tape. Gary B. Borzen did it last week, and it was the most amazing thing I'd heard in a long time. And it was all the disciplines, from psychology to ecology to science. Physics. He's a physics person. You just might like to try and listen to that. So they do impact. You heard that, I think, didn't you, Gene?
No, I wish I had.
Yeah, I would listen to that. Distribution of land and distribution of power. Now, we don't like to give up power too much. But I'd like to share with you some material from in here, just in case you never read it. And I apologize to you that I have to read it, but it's probably the most effective way. Unless, of course, I haven't got my glasses on. At the present, many developing countries produce crops for export to satisfy the eating habits of developed countries. They grow for export such products as coffee, sugar, tea, cocoa, and flowers. There they are. All of our, don't we love them? Much of what we eat and drink for breakfast or midday snacks comes to us from the powerless. Indeed, more and more of our vegetables and meats come from them as well. Little do we realize that while we are enjoying the food grown in the lands of the powerless, they're prevented from growing enough food for themselves. They could grow if they had control of their lands, but the problem is, one of the problems is, foreign firms have bought up the lands. These lands previously grew citrus, bananas, and grains for local consumption. Colonial powers took over the land to grow cotton, rubber trees, sugar cane, and coffee, for example. In the Sahel, African desert, natives were forced to give over even their marginal desert land to grow cotton for export, and forced to cultivate it. That destroyed the local agricultural know-how. That's the other part, of course. We lose our education, we lose our ability to take care of ourselves, which had produced food for local use up to that time. During the famine in the African Sahel in the early 70s, the export of grains for North European cattle feeding continued, and the export of cotton and peanuts actually increased. In Central America and the Caribbean, where as much as 70% of the children are undernourished, at least half of the agricultural land produces crops for exports. As an example, Texas cattle have been flown to Haiti for grazing and then returned to the U.S. for fast food chains.